Welcome to the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel, powered by InsideTexas.com. It is another edition of Wednesday Night Live. We've got Eric Nalin, Justin Wells, and Drew Kelson, as always, on our Wednesday night. We got a lot of stuff going on. Team info, as Texas is halfway through spring practices, through their allotment of spring practices. Recruiting intel, as April 6th, this Saturday, is shaping up to be a huge weekend. And then a little bit of everything. We'll also take your questions, so get your comments in. We'd love to answer them here during our just under an hour with everybody. So, Eric, you and I talked earlier. We posted some good intel on practice on this channel earlier. Hope everybody likes it. But what are some of the big takeaways you've gotten from just catching up with sources over the past few days?
Yeah, I encourage those people to everybody to go watch the practice specific video we posted a little earlier, a couple hours ago, but we went in better detail. But yeah, the run game is coming along. At the same time, the defensive line outside of not the edges, but the defensive tackles are trying to find their footings. They've got gigantic shoes to replace with Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, and then new linebackers. The linebackers are still learning the proper run fits, even though some of those guys have experience. Obviously Anthony Hill's in a different position right now, so the story of spring right now is the Texas run game, and really Quinn Ewers' composure and confidence and increasing comfort leading the team in the run game versus the defensive tackles and the linebackers are really the story that I'm paying the closest attention to, and what we'll be hunting information for after the scrimmage on Saturday.
Justin, covering recruiting, looking at all the top prospects and the stars worth of talent that are coming into Austin, do you remember anything like this as far as just a spring practice? We know guys have kind of come in at their own leisure for spring practices. They've had tentpole events in the forms of camps, junior days, and summer visit days, I guess to say. But do you remember anything like this that we're going to have for this scrimmage? Not even the spring game, but scrimmage on Saturday?
It'd be hard to think about, but I mean, they always bring in guys for these scrimmages. They always bring in guys because it's an opportunity, one, for them to see the players, two, for the players to see practice, see a scrimmage, kind of see things up close. And so, I mean, Texas, they have all the momentum coming off 2023. And the way you maximize that is you have as many events as possible. And so if you've got a Saturday scrimmage, turn it into a recruiting event where you host 15 or 20 kids that are, highly rated, highly recruited guys, any opportunity to get these guys back on campus. For an example, KJ Lacy, he was just at Auburn. So it's not a bad idea to get him back on campus. Zion Williams, he's been to LSU twice since he's been to Texas. Getting him back in April, I think, is a strong data point. And so I wouldn't say I don't know if I've seen this many before, but kids, they come to these things all the time. I just think this specific one is a handful of your higher rated elite guys. It has a 2006 junior day vibe to it, but not near as many players.
Get your questions in. We'd love to answer any questions you'll have about recruiting, the latest from team and from the practices. And Drew, one of the questions that we got over on Inside Texas, the members only message board, comes from a friend of ours, Dak the Dog. He goes, I'm curious to what level former players hate rivals compared to fans. I'm sure most of them have standard disdain, but I suspect it's nowhere near the level of hatred that fans build up. And, when thinking about the game of football, that's just a collision sport, a constant battle. I know it's great to get charged up maybe on a down-to-down basis, but does seeing, in Texas' case, seeing maroon or seeing crimson on the other side of the field charge you up a little bit more than maybe seeing Baylor green and gold or anything like that?
As an existing player, no, not, it's not even close. The players have no idea. We didn't have any idea. Even these players today, they have no idea as an existing player how much hate there is in that stadium. It wasn't until I wasn't a player and I went to Texas OU and experienced it for myself, all the years of my mom telling me, like, I hate OU. And I was like, how do you know you hate OU? I've been on campus 2 years. You've gone to two games. They're fans. That was it. And so it's their fans. And when there's mutual hate, I mean, it's just easy to do. So as a former player, I hate him as much as all of y'all now. I think people forget I'm a fan now. Like I'm not playing anymore. I can't put on pads. I can't take this hate and bottle it up and go take it to the field. So I'm with you. I have to let it out in other ways. The one thing I will say is a little bit different is I still respect the players. I mean, every player at every college campus across the country, I know the work that goes into it. I know what these guys sacrifice. I know how much work goes into the coaches. So I hate them. I really, really, really do. But there's a certain level of respect that you just take into it. So you almost hate them so much and respect them so much. You want to see your team prepare. You want to see your team go out and beat them. And that's one thing as a player who was playing the game that was made clear to us early on, regardless of whether we hated OU or not, that was the game. That was absolutely the rivalry that was make or break for really how we are perceived amongst our fans, how we're perceived amongst the fan base, and just how we gauge where we are in the season based on when it starts. So the hate is absolutely there. Make no mistake. I hate to see it. Hate to see it. I hate to see them. So yeah, it's real.
One perspective I have is that for the longest time, Oklahoma, I mean, granted, I think everybody here can agree Oklahoma's rival number one, Texas A&M rival number two when it comes to the Longhorns. But for me and Drew, maybe it was the same for you. When we had friends go to other schools, you and I are from the Houston area. We didn't have a lot of friends who ended up going to Oklahoma. So for you and I, Texas A&M was kind of the scene rival. And I'm sure that like you and I may have had opportunities, if we ever wanted to host friends from College Station, maybe go to College Station if we ever really wanted to. I didn't have any friends go to Oklahoma. Justin, maybe in East Texas, it's different. And I know for sure in Dallas, Fort Worth, it's different. But like, yeah. I didn't know anybody who went to Oklahoma. It was almost like that rival, and this is almost like wartime propaganda, that rival you don't know, that you never see. It's easier to dislike them a lot more than it is maybe saying like, oh, you know, I can't hate these guys. Some of my best friends go to that school. It's a little different. But granted, it, once you step in between the lines, it's not your colors. And at that point, you're trying to beat everybody. Let's get to some questions.
Go ahead. I had a friend in my senior class in high school that became a cheerleader at Oklahoma. She was a really cool chick too, really into sports, just a fun chick to hang out with. So yeah, we had a couple buddies. And then one of my teammates actually had his best offer was Oklahoma. And this was 95, 96. Oklahoma was his best offer, but Oklahoma was low. They weren't that good at the time. I think John Blake was still the coach. And so this
is Burger.
No, it was. I think it was Blake. I think it was Coach Blake, actually. And then, of course, Notre Dame came through, and Lou Holtz offered him, and he committed on the spot and started in Notre Dame for 3 years. But, that, yeah, I had two of my friends. They had very close ties to Oklahoma. But then again, back in the mid-90s, I'm not really sure how much the Texas OU thing was real, but it wasn't magnified like I feel like it got in the 2000s. Like I felt like in the 2000s, that game was big. It got even bigger. And because both teams had so much success.
You know, the interesting thing about Texas and A&M is that, you know, there's a lot of Texas players that never played A&M just because of the long hiatus. And those Texas players still hated A&M just because they had to deal with their fans on social media. There's a lot of UT players that can't stand A&M, wish they could play them just because of how irksome their fans are on Twitter or Instagram or whatever.
Agree.
My freshman year was 2012, and that was, you know, that was the first class that didn't include playing A&M. So I'm excited to see it. Cotton has a good point. Once you're against us, you're against us. There's no going back. Our buddy LP, being from Waco, make no mistake, the whole of Baylor totally hates Texas. They're not going to be able to manifest that much anymore. This one, grew up in Plano, graduated with 1,000 people, which I don't know how long ago that was, considering how big we know Plano, all those high schools are. Zero went to OU, which is, That's a little surprising to me, but it speaks, you know, the whole Metroplex goes all over the place. But let's get to some questions. I do like this one from Chris Bennett. It does lead into some of the stuff, Eric, that you and I touched on when it comes to the way that the edge position has succeeded pretty often during spring football. Who leads the team in sacks and with what number? And I will look up who led the team in sacks this past year while you give your answer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Trey Moore if he stays healthy. I'm not sure he's going to come off the field a whole lot. He could play Buck. He could play Sam. What number? I don't know, man. I need to hear more about scrimmages and how well he's getting around the corner on these bigger tackles. We know he's a good player. He's holding up well, even against the run. I think he's going to be a double-digit sacker, but it's also they're going to play a lot of games this season. You know, we don't even know how many games they're going to play. It's most likely going to be a lot more than 12. So I'll say 11, maybe. I'll say 11. He had 13 and a half, 14 last year. I know it's lesser competition, but, you know, he's a proven sack artist.
If they were still in the Big 12, I'd say 10 is easy. That would be the baseline. But going to the SEC, he's going to face some bigger boys on that outside.
Yeah, no doubt.
So the team leader last year was Ethan Burke with 5.5.
Yeah, 5.5.
After what, that,
Hill had five.
Anthony Hill had five. And then Byron Murphy had five, which you're probably not going to have that five in the middle there. Looking at Trey Moore last year, he had 14 in the American Conference. And that was in what? That was in 12 games for them, because I think he didn't. You know, obviously he entered the portal and went through his process. Trey Moore, I'll give him double digits. I like that as well. I think he can get there, especially if he goes as far as Texas. If Texas goes as far as we think they will. Drew, who do you have for this question?
It's hard not to go Trey Moore, but I do think Ethan Burke improves this year. I'm not ruling out. I mean, he won't be the team leader, but I'm not ruling out Alfred Collins on at least matching that five number for that we saw last year from interiors. I don't know why. It's just I keep visualizing what he's capable of, and I have to think this is a year that'll be the year. And as we start putting more pressure on the exterior, on the edges of the line of scrimmage, maybe that opens up some opportunities for him and his athleticism and just for him to get after people. So I don't know, but it's hard to not go with Trey Moore, just considering his tools. Everything in his bag is lethal, so he can get to the quarterback.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with Burke because he's going to probably be the jack on passing downs, I'd imagine, replacing Sorrell. I don't think Barron's going to like that too much, but yeah, they got a lot of guys that can at least get five or six sacks, more so than they've had in the past.
We've got another great question from Football Junkie. Thank you for Super Chat. How many defensive tackles do we take in the portal? Rumor going around that we could take two or three could be a huge concern. Well, first off, they have to get below 85. They're at 89 right now, but that's not going to be a concern at all. Second thing, those defensive tackles, those starter caliber defensive tackles or rotation caliber, they got to jump in. If two, three, four of those guys jump in, you can be – Eric, I think you can rest assured that Texas is going to be very interested pretty much off the bat.
Yeah, everybody's going to be fighting over those guys. And again, we've mentioned a lot of times on the show, but you know, there's no intra-SEC transfers in this next window. So anybody that goes in from used to be the Big, now in the Big Ten, and maybe the ACC, the SEC teams are going to be frothing over. It's going to be sharks in the water after those guys. So getting two in the same portal window is tough. A, because you have competition on your own team. It's hard. Those guys want to go play immediately. But also because every team in the SEC is going to be after them. So I think it's possible they take two, with one being a potential starter. But competition is fierce for defensive tackles to begin with. There's those other factors we mentioned. They're going to be aggressive. But, you know, nobody knows what the portal is going to bear yet. I would feel pretty confident that they will add somebody. Now, how good that player is remains to be seen.
Justin, you were given the two. You think the same thing?
Yeah, you know, Eric and I talk about it all the time. And so I think ideally they would want to. I think they would be really happy with two more guys that they could count on to be in the rotation.
No doubt.
Realistically, I think it's one for sure. I would be shocked if they go into the fall without an additional defensive lineman. But like you said, they got to get under that number, and we won't know that for sure till after spring ball. So I think in a perfect world, they would add two more just to make sure they felt better. Maybe Sark would sleep better at night with a big old joker from Michigan or a big old dude from Ohio State. Maybe he'd like that a little bit more. But, man, they got the numbers. They're going to have to make it work. And I think one for sure.
The other thing that our buddy Longhorn mentions, they have to get down to 85. That's not going to be a problem. No. Like, we at this point with the way the portal works, with the way I'm pretty sure that everybody on this team knows where they stand, there's going to be some talented guys. And Eric, Justin, even Drew, you've mentioned this on the show. There are going to be some talented guys who end up entering the portal, finding another place to play and earn playing time. And it's not through any real fault of their own. It's just that's how the roster is at this point. Is that talented to where some of the baseline needed to meet to see the field is so high that some of those guys don't want to wait and think they can get playing time elsewhere. So, yes, they do need to get down to 85, but I don't think that's going to be much of an issue for this team considering just the natural attrition that pops up with the transfer portal every single year. Y'all want to talk a little bit about recruiting and go over – I think we have six of the biggest names or six of the big names that are going to be heading to town this weekend. Justin, I think you always got to start with quarterbacks. And in the 2025 class, KJ Lacy will be making his way back to Texas. Like you mentioned, he just saw Auburn, but he keeps saying the right things despite those visits elsewhere. Only has an official visit scheduled to Texas. Is going to be back in 2 weeks after this upcoming visit. How important is this for Texas, for Sarkisian, for AJ Milwee when it comes to keeping Lacy in the fold? How important will this visit be?
Actually, I think it's more important that he's going to be on campus at the same time as DeCorian Moore and Kalik Lockett. I think that's more important. You know, Lacy's been to Austin so much. And, yeah, he's taken a few trips to other places. But like you said, he's remained steady really, really well. I think he wants to be a part of Texas. I think he loves Sark and AJ, and he understands – you know what, I'd like to follow Arch Manning or potentially Trey Owens. And so it's not just – I think it's always important when you get your quarterback commit on campus, especially when he's taking other visits. But honestly, I think it's the time that he's coming in that's more important. When he's got the two main guys that he may be able to throw to, you know, when he gets to Austin potentially in 2025, and that's DeCorian Moore and Kalik. Like, I think those guys mingling and talking and interacting with each other is as valuable as any of them coming individually.
Eric, we saw he ended up earning an invite to the Elite 11 Finals from coming and performing at the Elite 11 Regional in Austin. Saw a Texas practice the next day. We always say follow the visits. He keeps visiting Texas more and more compared to other schools. How do you view KJ Lacy in this class at the current juncture?
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. You know, like you said, he's doing all the right things. I think he committed for the right reasons, and when you commit for the right reasons, you tend to stay committed. Yeah. At the same time, I don't really fault him for keeping his options at least somewhat open, just for how crazy the coaching carousel can be, and how we don't know what's going to happen in December. Sark wins a national championship, and he goes and coaches, the Dallas Cowboys. So, you know, you're just going to keep your options open. There's 3% chance that anything happens. Well, there's only 3% chance that he'll flip. You know, there's two wide receivers I'd heard that he's kind of been in contact with. DeCorian Moore and Jamie French is the other. Last we heard, Jamie French was going to be there this weekend as well, one of the top wide receivers in the country, with DeCorian Moore, Kelshon Johnson, and Kalik Lockett. So I think Justin makes a very astute point there that, you know, quit worrying about playing defense and keeping him. Worry about putting him on offense and recruiting for you. I think we should look at the bright side, and I think Justin made a good point there.
What about the we'll get to the spring game visitors later, because there's another quarterback visiting for the spring game. We wrote about that on Inside Texas last week. But we'll get to that when it gets here, because we got more important visitors, including Jordan Davison. And Justin, this is one that has taken, I don't want to say twists and turns, but some of the factors that are involved in this recruitment have definitely changed. And it has to do with the spinning of the assistant coaching carousel at some other schools.
Yeah, with Jordan Davison, he was, you know, I think Ohio State was always kind of his second school. I mean, I know he liked Oregon. We know he liked USC. But Texas and Ohio State were the two teams that he would mention the most when you catch up with him. And you got to understand, he's been building with Choice for over almost 2 years now. And so those two guys, that was the main thing I got from catching up with him last night, was he's the most consistent coach I've got recruiting me. And I think that's big. I think the buzz, the post-visit high kind of hit Davison a little bit when he went to Ohio State, went to Michigan. And then he finds out the Oregon coach that he always liked is now going to be in Columbus. So that, you know, it feels right. Wow, that must be fate. And then he's going to come back to Austin and remember and remind himself why he loves Texas. And so if anything, I just think it's really started the recruitment. I think Texas has been the leader for a while. I think they laid the early foundation and did everything Tashaar Choice usually does when you're talking about running back recruiting, building a relationship, getting close and closing. I mean, that's just what he does. But the fact that Davison went through all these other trips was good because he needs to see the other side of it. So he can know when he does make that call, it, you know, he'll be zeroed in. He's probably going to drop a top five, top six in the next few days. But remember, Texas and Ohio State are going to be the two teams in this. Personally, I think once he gets back to Austin, once he sees Coach Choice, once he sees the other players, the modern day guys, that pipeline has some effect, guys. Not just with Brandon Baker, Spencer Shannon, with Marcus Harris, with Nasir Wyatt, that Sean Scott, there's something there. And I think that will resonate as well. So to me, I just think the recruitment's got started. You know, the newly hired Steve Wilfong, I caught up with him yesterday. You know, he put in a crystal ball. He basically said he thinks Ohio State's the leader at this stage. Let's see what he said. Let's see what Jordan says after this visit. Because again, I think this recruitment is really just now starting. And I think you're going to see a decision in the summertime, but Ohio State's going to prioritize him. Lachlan, the new running back coach, loves him. Choice has got a battle on his hands. And what's Choice going to do? He's going to put on his gloves and throw hands.
I think we know that getting Jordan Davison's big for the Longhorns, but making sure they knock out this visit and knock out the official visit, especially when compared to the types of schools are battling. That's what it's going to
Texas is getting the last one. Sorry to interrupt. Texas is still getting the last official visit. To me, you know, Eric says it all the time, that last OV can be the closing. That can be the biggest one of all. And I think that's why I think Zion Williams last weekend, Marcus Harris last weekend, you start DeCorian Moore last weekend. You start looking at these fact patterns, and I think that actually bodes well for Texas as well.
Drew, I got a recruiting question for you. What was your fastest 100 time back for Lamar High School?
Man, I ran the 400, so I'm like, goodness, what did I run it in? The fastest I remember telling myself I ran was maybe a 10.9, maybe, but I ran a 47 400. I mean, I verticaled 42. Like, I was an explosive athlete and player, but as far as sprinting, no. I was just strong.
You ran a 47 400.
Yeah,
it's pretty dang good.
And dude. I hated track
for a DB. God.
Well, yeah. I mean, I ran that was the one race I ran from as young as I can remember running track to all the way through high school. So I just learned how to run the race, and I was just crazy enough to run it. But I wasn't 200. Nope. 800, hell no. 400, yeah, we can go.
400 and 300 hurdles are the worst, right?
Yeah.
There's so much strategy to those runs as well, man. I didn't realize it till this year how much strategy is involved.
So I asked that question because I'm looking at athletic.net. The last 300 times listed for Duncanville wide receiver DeCorian Moore are, sorry, Drew, 10.65, 10.51, and we just saw on social media earlier today, DeCorian Moore ran a 10.4. Number three overall prospect, I believe, in the On3 industry ranking, LSU commit. But Justin, he's going to see Texas a good amount over the next weeks and months, including this upcoming weekend. And this is going to be And here you go. This puts you on the spot with a question from Brett Nelson. Yes or no, does Texas flip more?
You know, I don't think it's a yes or no question. I think it's a win. I'm just being honest. You know, and I'm sure there's guys at LSU on three site. What do they call it? Joe Tiger bait?
Bengal Tiger.
I've got some big fans at the Bengal Tiger. I mean, these guys, they email me a lot. And I'm so grateful for satisfied customers. I know it makes everyone happy. Yeah, I think Texas is going to flip more. I think we've said that so much. Maybe we believe it ourselves, but this recruitment's not going to start till the end of the year, October, November, December range. The fact that he's going to be in now, he was in last weekend. His mother went and hung out with the staff. He's going to be back on April 20th. He's going to be back for the last official visit in June. That's a lot of data points, guys. That's a lot of – so there's some confidence in what we're saying. And he'll tell you he is solid at LSU. He is locked in because I think that Corian can see himself playing at LSU. I think it's easy for him. He grew up watching that really good group of wide receivers come through. And so these kids, they love LSU anyway. There's a lot of coolness to it. So I think DeCorian can see himself doing that. Do I think he winds up signing with LSU? No. I think he's going to flip to Texas. I don't think it's a yes or no. I just think it's a win.
Eric, DeCorian's in the category, I believe, of must-get recruit for you, just considering – the speed, the skill, where he's from, all that stuff. And, you know, even KJ Lacy has said he doesn't see DeCorian Moore leaving Texas. And we know how Steve Sarkisian's done when it comes to must get recruits who hail from Duncanville High School in recent years as well.
Yeah. I mean, the goal, you know, their goal of getting Isaiah Bond and Matthew Gold out as soon as possible so that they can start the conveyor belt back up and bring in DeCorian Moore and get him on the field as soon as possible. You know, that's the whole, they want these guys in and out. They want 3-year players all across the board. Ryan Wingo is probably going to be a 3-year player. Jonte Cook is probably, there's a chance Jonte Cook blows up in this offense and is a 3-year player. So I think, you know, that's a huge selling point for DeCorian. And that recruitment is right on time as far as I'm concerned. You know, you know, I think a lot of fans are afraid of playing from the perception that they're behind. You know, I think that things are pretty damn even. He just gave a commitment early for reasons he had, and now I'm with Justin. I think it's going to happen. I do think it's a yes or no question. If you answer is the answer is when, that's like saying yes, but we differ a little bit. Let's transition. We're talking about fast people. He won't be on campus, but as a linebacker, Riley Pettijohn ran 10.77. And there is another fast linebacker that is coming in to tie it back into this weekend, Bo Barnes. What did Coach Williams say he ran? 10.8 or 10.9?
10.9. And he said it was a 10.9 because he thought Bo was chasing DeCorian.
Yeah. Linebackers running 10.9, 10.7. LSU has a commit, CJ Ross from North Shore, that's run 10.4. That does make your 100 sound pretty terrible, Drew.
I told you, I can't tell you what the time was because I didn't run it. But I bet.
We don't know. But Pettijohn, I'm not seeing Pettijohn run a 47.400 either. And we love some Pettijohn. So, yeah, Drew, I got your back.
I ran a 4.440, 47.400. The last time I was clocked in 100, eighth grade, maybe.
Oh, okay. Ninth right. grade. Maybe, okay. Maybe. You had better 100 meters.
I ran a 10.9 in the ninth grade. I'll take that.
So,
Bo Barnes is 230. Okay. That is moving. And remember, he told us a couple months ago at a track meet, he's like, I'm not going to catch Caden Durham, but I'm going to run real hard to try to catch him. He identifies the fastest guy in his race. He's like, I'm going to chase that guy. That's competition. That's why Pettijohn and Barnes are just would be such good fits, I think, in Austin.
So I think that's where we want to go next. And when you look at some recent commitments, especially one to USC and Matai Tagoai, it looks like Barnes and it looks like Pettijohn, as we've seen for a while, continue to be the top two targets at linebacker. It's a position where they only took one in the 2024 high school class. They, of course, added Kendrick Blackshire, but Eric, when they're trying to go after linebacker, they always try to value great physical traits. Speed looks like one of them for not just the 2024 class with Ty Anthony, but also in their top two targets here in Barnes and in Pettijohn.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to get both those guys, feel confident. I don't think I have a RPM in, but I think Justin and Coach Dub do, and I agree wholeheartedly with those. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good tandem. That's a lot of raw materials to work with. I think Bo is maybe a little more raw than Pettijohn, but he's got significant upside. So, yeah, I think Johnny Nansen's going to recruit well this cycle. We'll see. But Ty Anthony Smith, I know everybody wants as much team news as they can get. He's looking like a future stud. He's got to get bigger, but he's already put on some muscle. Texas football released a video yesterday about nutrition. It's on Twitter. I saw he was one of the guys eating a lot. It was funny because somebody I talked to said that you could tell that kid's putting in time to work. It's a lot of work to get big. A lot of people don't understand because eating is fun. But these guys have to eat beyond their comfort zone a lot of times to put on muscle. And he's doing what it takes to add weight as fast as he can in the right way.
And of note, I was in Jasper last night, and so I got to catch up with Ty Anthony Smith's, you know, head football coach. And we talked for a while, and you know, he keeps in contact with Ty Anthony, and we talked about his recruitment and how Jeff Choate like nailed it towards the end, and how Jasper is, you know, pretty A&M, you know, friendly. And they were able to come in and get him. And I asked Keyati, I said, you know, how much does Ty Anthony tell you? How much is he, you know, recruiting you, the 2025 tight end? And he said, man, the guy's already putting on muscle. He's already doing well there. He's not expecting to play right now. His coach said he thinks he can make an impact next year as a sophomore, being like a sidekick for Anthony Hill. But that Ty Anthony absolutely loves it. All he's got to do is get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, and get some reps. And so I think it just shows how good how healthy this program is, and how Ty Anthony Smith is going to help now with some other recruits, like a former teammate in Keyati Armstrong. I think he's going to be a plus in that recruitment at the end of the day.
We've got one more big recruit we want to touch on, but make sure you head to Inside Texas, because we are going to have the full list all throughout the week, preview these visits, have updates as they get in. So head to Inside Texas. Make sure you like the video. Got to get one of those requests in. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. Helps us out, helps us bring you daily Texas Longhorns content. But Justin, the last big visitor that we need to talk about, and that will be on campus for the first time in some while on Saturday, is Zion Williams, a defensive tackle out of Lufkin. And Bo Davis, he brought a good relationship with Williams to LSU with him, and now Kenny Baker has to try to work to make his own good relationship to bring Williams to Texas.
I think that's what it's going to come down to, Joe. I really do. I think it's going to be his relationship with Kenny Baker, because the reason he was loving Texas, one of the main reasons, was Bo Davis. It was that relationship. I think that's important to this kid. And so it's going to be the first time he sees Coach Baker face-to-face. They've talked on the phone a number of times. But also, don't forget, Sark calls this kid weekly. PK talks to this kid on a regular basis. And so this is going to be a village-type recruitment where everyone's going to have to get involved. You don't want to just throw this all on the newcomer defensive line coach who's not really recruited at this level in his career. You don't want to put all that pressure on him, because Zion is a must-get. You know, trademark Eric Nolin, he is a must-get. And so I think it's good that he's coming back. I think it's even better that he's going to be back in June for an official. This recruitment is still I think it's barely started to kick off. But LSU does have the upper hand, and it's because of that relationship with Bo. Biggest factor, getting closer to Kenny Baker. And if Zion is 1A, Jonah is 1B. Because the way they've made up, and Eric's been reporting this, the way they're making up ground with Jonah Williams, five-star safety out of Galveston Ball, that's huge, guys. That's huge, because you get those two Williamsons, man. that's a lot of size, a lot of talent. And so I don't want to take it all to Zion. I think Jonah and Zion are both really, really important coming in this weekend.
Yeah, how are we going to get off without talking about Jonah? He's a beast, an absolute beast. They love him. And Nick Townsend is another guy you got to talk about. I think Nick Townsend has five-star upside. So it's a very big weekend. Texas has a chance to either supplant their relationships or, you know, strengthen them, maybe put themselves in a pole position with them. This one's tangential to what we're talking about with Drew. We saw Drew's athleticism chasing Reggie Bush. Cade Phillips will be in town for the first time since he got offered. Cade Phillips has a 24.7 and a half long jump. He has a 21.89 200, and he's got a sub 11 100. So this kid is an all-around athlete, and he's 6'2". You know, 180 pounds, going to fill out nicely. Could play college wide receiver, but he'll be a safety in college. Good chance that's going to be at Texas. Kids are just an all-around athlete. 24.7 and a half is a big, big leap.
I feel like we've almost done a disservice to him, Eric, because we weren't talking enough. We've talked about Cade Phillips for, you know, since before he was offered, but I felt like we didn't put enough into it. Yeah. Because this kid has, he's got some superstar written on him. You watch the tape, you meet him, you talk to him. Like, this is a really good kid, a really good prospect. I felt like we've been giving him a little disservice. We should have been talking him up a lot earlier.
Oh, and you know, in that track profile with that 47, he's got 47, 400 like Drew. Drew, who was your runner up school, or who would you have gone to if you didn't play football? It's the same that Cade has. Stanford.
Who have gone to? Is it Stanford?
Yeah, Stanford for Cade.
Nerd.
I know you like Stanford quite a bit too. So
nerd.
Yeah,
I committed early. It wouldn't have ended up 1-2 with Stanford. It probably would have been. It would have had to have been somewhere else. But Stanford was definitely.
You said you like Stanford. Maybe you're just trying to sound all smart. We were in a debate at the time. Well, you know, Eric, I could have gone to Stanford.
Well, no, Stanford was the other place that it was like, yeah, that was the number two at the time. I committed in the spring, but it was different. I mean, I was talking to LSU. I was talking to Notre Dame. I had offers from both. I had offers from A&M, Arkansas. But Stanford had always stood out to me just as a place I wanted to go, because mama told me at ninth grade, like, hey, you better keep those grades up because you need options, you know? So I made sure I had options. But I didn't want to like Texas. I'd gone to Texas Relays a couple times. I'd been to campus, but at that time there was no recruiting. I mean, I didn't go by the football offices when I went to Texas Relays, and I was a football recruit. I was just running track. I was just on campus. At that time, it was, I mean, you just go and, I mean, you went during a certain time. So we went to camps, we went to junior days, but you just weren't showing up and having a full, like, you weren't showing up to spring practices like this. Yeah. So it was just a different time. I look back, it's like, where would I have gone if I had visited more places and done anything else? But Austin was where I was supposed to be. Babe.
Drew, do you know who else almost went to Stanford? He was a four-year starter at Texas.
Four-year starter at Texas. Who is that?
Sam Ehlinger.
Oh, God. He wasn't going to Stanford. Give me a break.
If Kyle Allen.
He was not going to Stanford.
Okay. He wasn't going. He didn't call me the night before he met Herman. He told me, if he's bringing in Kyle Allen, I'm flipping to Stanford.
Well, I
believed him.
Okay. I'll shut him up. If there was a Tom Herman angle, then I can believe it a little bit more.
You know, that's the truth. I told you that story 6 years ago. I called you that night.
The kids say a lot of things, man. I mean, Kyle Allen and Herman, I could see that. I could see there being some.
He was not happy with that. He's like, just be ready. You better be ready, Justin.
I'm like, ooh, this is a good one for Drew.
I like this one. Yeah. From Scooter Lannister. Will this preseason buildup be more enjoyable than 05, 08, and 09? First year in the SEC, we're on the short list for SEC and national championships. The 12-team playoff, the new NCAA football game is out. Big Ten is also different. I know 05 had big buildup. I don't remember 08 having big buildup and coming a little bit more as a surprise. But after 08, I know 09 for sure had big buildup. So, man, this is a good one. Drew, what do you think on this?
I mean, it depends on what we consider enjoyable, right? Like, of course there's going to be buildup. I mean, we're going into a new league. We have some fun home games. Georgia's coming to town. Florida's coming to town. But we get to go on the road to Arkansas. We get to go on the road to College Station. You can't beat that. I mean, yeah, so there's going to be buildup. But the difference with this for us, I think the reason why we're going all the way back to 08 and 09 and 05 is because nothing happened in the 2010s. We have nothing to compare it to. We don't have a team we're proud of in the 2010s that we are to this point. We don't have a roster and a coach and just everything to come together. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of buildup coming to this game. We got Michigan now. We play them on the road this year. So, yeah, I mean, this season is huge. There's a lot of nuance, but a lot of new things, a lot of things that are being refreshed from the past that we get to enjoy this year. So it's still April. You know, let's keep grinding it out, baby.
Well, you remember, too, in 08, you know, coming off 07, Colt McCoy had his worst year in Austin. You know, he had, I want to say, threw 15, 20 interceptions. In 2017, he was injured a little bit. Now, they had a great bowl game, the Jamal Charles game. They had a great bowl game. I believe they beat Arizona State, maybe. Yep. Rudy Carpenter. I think they thumped them pretty good. But the 08 didn't start until that OU game. After OU, that's when that thing got cranked up. But yeah, if you'll remember going into 08, Texas didn't really – Mack Brown was really confident with what they had, but they didn't actually know it until they started putting it on the field and doing it. And I think that OU win is what propelled everything.
Yeah, there was there were a little bit
about that 08 season.
Go ahead.
There were a couple things about that 08 season that I don't think – the transition after Vince left, we knew Colt was going to be the guy, but you were still replacing – offensive linemen who were multi-year starters. You were replacing receivers. You were replacing – like, there was a lot to transition during that period. It was unpredictable. You just didn't know. I mean, Colt was a – what? I mean, he went to Jim Ned. Is, I don't even know if – does that school still exist?
Tuscola, too.
To Tuscola. Like, I mean, I played him in 7-on-7 the summer before. I'd never heard of the school, and he kicked our ass. So – Colt is just one of those unassuming players that even after you see him perform and perform at practice and everything else, only the people in the building actually knew what he was capable of throwing the ball. The key thing was, I think it took some time for the offense and the offensive system to transition to meet Colt's strengths and transition out of the handicap that was Vince Young. And then once Colt, I mean, he got a hold of the playbook and he ran with it.
Well, to also remember his freshman year, he had all of Vince's offensive line return, and then they all graduated. And so in 2007, they were bringing in a whole new crop of guys, Yule Litosky, Michael Huey, all those guys. And so I think it took a year or so for those guys to gel. That's a good point.
The excitement around 08 was Will Muschamp coming in. That was like the main excitement that they had Muschamp coming in. Other than that, there was a lot of question marks around that offense because of the year that Colt had. I think Jermichael Finley really bailed Colt out of about three more interceptions that season. So, I was definitely one of those that was down on Colt in 07. But, yeah, Muschamp coming in 08 gave the program a little bit of a boost. We didn't know at the time that it would be a massive boost, almost led to two national championships. That's how big the boost was. There was excitement, but not as excited as we should have been if we knew how the next couple years were going to go.
And also, they lost Jermichael Finley and Jamal Charles to the draft early. And that, you know, they didn't know that was going to happen after 07. So that really threw a question mark in 08.
Yep.
So if this is the most hyped up year, and rightfully so, since 2009, what's kind of the second one since 2009? I think it was 2019. We all kind of thought that 2019 offense was going to take Texas to places.
If they beat LSU.
I had a lot of questions about Orlando going into that season. I predicted that Georgia win. I predicted that Georgia win in the Sugar Bowl, like the second it was announced, because I knew that Georgia would lack some motivation, and I knew Orlando could stop that type of offense. I was much more worried about him versus spread. So I was down on Orlando. I wasn't as excited on 19, and they lost some guys that really would have helped that 19 team be pretty good. Didn't they lose a couple guys early to that? Or that was the year before. Anyway, I wasn't excited about 2019.
Humphrey.
2018, I was pretty excited about, but Todd Orlando lost me in 2018. And it was hard for me to get super excited about their upside.
That LSU game was everything. This team, if this team beats LSU, I think they make a run, Eric. I really do. Yeah. And the fact they lost so closely the way they did and watched LSU make that historic run just compiled it.
But Texas, I mean, that was kind of the story of the decade, though. They would play up to the competition and down to the competition.
You're right.
So, you know, they played up to LSU. It was a hell of a game, no doubt. But I didn't have any faith in Orlando.
So I like
zero blitz.
I like this one from Hi, I'm Boo Corrigan. This is a guy who's been in this channel for a while. We appreciate him. What player are y'all most excited to see in the spring game? Mine is probably Amari Nyblack, and I can't wait to see a tight end that moves like a wide receiver. Drew, I'll toss you this one first. Who are you excited to see in the spring game?
Colin Simmons.
Hey.
You see a guy on a high school level play, and you see him be dominant. You see all his tools. I want to see him just live. I want to see him in pads. I want to see him run around. I want to see him play. Trey Moore is a great addition this offseason, but we need Colin Simmons to develop and be an anchor for our edges for the future. So I really want to see him show up. I really want to see how he moves around. He's my choice there.
Justin, you're next. Who are you most excited to see in the spring game?
I know what he's going to say.
You know exactly what I'm going to say, and it's because Sark keeps saying it. I want to see Ryan Wingo. I want to see Loomroad. I want to see number 5, man. This dude, Listen, Sark never talks about freshmen. I think it took him till October to talk about Anthony Hill last year. The fact that he's bringing up an early enrollee who's been on campus for maybe 2 months, going into his third month, I want to see what Ryan Wingo brings. Not to mention you got Isaiah Bond, Matthew Gold, and Jonte Cook, all those receivers. Give me some Wingo, man.
Eric?
I'm with Justin, but I'm glad you went with him because then I had to think of somebody else because I wasn't going to take Wingo from Justin since he knew him so well during that recruitment. Give me Big Cam Williams at right tackle. How about that? Ooh. Replacing Christian Jones. I'm hearing that he's looking mighty quick on the move out in the screen game, running outside zone. I want to see this for my own eyes. Is he down to 350? You know, I want to put my eyes on him when he's moving. So we'll see. That's probably my guy. But Wingo, those are both excellent. I think Trey Moore deserves a mention as well. All the new guys. Cam's not new, but we haven't really seen him play extended snaps. It's always the new guys that you want to see the most from early on.
Y'all are talking a bunch of guys in their first year at Texas in various form. I'm going to talk about a guy in the second year. I want to see what CJ Baxter is able to do. The run game is probably going to be his, or he's going to have a large majority of the snaps. And when you think about spring game play calling, it's not fancy. There's probably not going to be a bunch of motion, maybe some play action, but not a whole lot to tip off future opposing defenses. Guys are going to be trying to prove themselves in stopping the run. And I think that I want to see CJ Baxter not only run decisively, but show off some of those five-star traits that we saw when he was at Edgewater High School in the Orlando area. So that's mine. And I have pretty good faith that he'll be able to do it, but a little bit different in that it's a guy who's returning, has already kind of earned the coach's trust in a certain sense after earning the starting nod during his first two games last year, but still has a lot more to prove, I feel like, here in his second season, especially with Jaden Blue and some other really talented backs behind him.
I've got something else that we all want to see. We want to see as many of you up at Posse East with us after the spring game. Come hang out. I'll buy you a burger, buy you a beer. Come hang out with Inside Texas up at Posse East, real close to campus.
That's always going to be a lot of fun. We're probably about to get out of here, just under an hour here on the Wednesday Night Live. Please like this video, subscribe to the channel. Helps us bring a bunch of great content your way. Head to InsideTexas.com. You can get 1 month of access for just $1. That'll take you through the transfer portal window, through the spring game, through practices, through so many different visits. It'll get you right on the cusp of official visit season. You're not going to want to miss that. Should be a lot of fun, and we can't wait to dish it out over on Inside Texas like we always do. So, Eric, Justin, Drew, thank you so much. We'll see you next time on the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel, powered by InsideTexas.com.